had "Babe with the Power" scrawled on it in pixie dust. He was leaning against the tree. Cat's eyes slitted lazily, but he smiled whenever the Shadow Hunter boy returned to him, and after the fifth time he made a small gesture, and the falling cherry blossoms began to circle around the boy's head, winding intricate patterns like bracelets around his arms, brushing against his plump cheeks and making him giggle. The warlock boy was very intense about soccer, short legs pumping furiously over the grass. Eventually, he seemed to become concerned Alec might win, and he picked up the ball and ran away with it back to Magnus and the other kid.
"I won," announced the warlock boy. "I always win."
Magnus kissed the boy on the cheek and laughed, and the sound of his laugh made a smile light on Alec's face as he jogged up to them. Janice had forgotten how much more Alec had begun to smile once Magnus was in his life.
"I heard you lost your soccer game," teased Magnus.
"I heard the console is a big loser."
Alec shrugged.
"No kiss for me, I guess."
He was flirting, Janice realized. Alec hadn't lived long enough to learn how to do that. Not in the confident way he was now.
"Oh, there just might be," said Magnus.
The Shadow Hunter kid was still playing with the floating blossoms. The warlock kid put his ball on the ground and trotted after it as it glided gently away. Alec leaned down, taking Magnus's pixie dust shirt in both hands to pull Magnus up towards him. Magnus's spiky head tipped back, and one of Alec's arms went around Magnus's waist. Janice remembered another world. Alec had still been clinging to what Magnus had become at the very last. Those strong, scarred archer's hands, always swift to protect and defend, held them fast. Even in death, there seemed no way to break Alec's grip. Janice hadn't had the chance to take Clary in his arms one last time, as Alec had with Magnus. Janice understood the choices Parapetai had made, the only choice he could have made, with evil on his threshold and all he loved in ruins. When Janice and Sebastian found them lying together in the rubble, Sebastian had been furious. He had wanted to capture Alec alive. Alec knew secrets about the resistance, about small pockets of hidden free humans, information Sebastian craved, and that Alec had died to hide. With a howl, Sebastian had kicked at Alec's body. The desolate lack where the Parapetai bond had been screamed. It was one of the few times Janice was able to think.
Kill him.
Now, in the sunlight of the park, the undergrowth crackled. Janice spun around to face the enemy, cursing himself for being distracted, for being sentimental, as Sebastian and Valentine always said he was.
"What are you doing, Uncle Jace?"
asked the warlock boy, clutching his ball and clearly pleased at making a much greater discovery. His round face was smiling and curious. Janice went still.
"Are you playing hide-and-seek?"
the boy continued. Slowly, Janice's hand moved towards his dagger. He whispered, "Yes." The boy darted into the bushes and put his arms around Janice's leg. Janice's hand tightened on his knife.
"I love you, Uncle Jace,"
the boy whispered, with a conspiratorial grin, and Janice shuddered.
"Don't be sad. I won't tell where you're hiding."
Janice drew his knife. Warlocks were not safe to be around, and it would be a quick, clean kill and better for Alec in the end.
"Max?"
Alec shouted. He didn't sound concerned now, but if there was no response, he would be.
"Max," thought Janice.
Long ago, the youngest Lightwood. In this world, Magnus was alive, so Alec was alive. Alec was the consul, and they had children. Alec had named his son for that lost Max. Janice let go of his knife. He let go of the boy. His hands were shaking too much to hold on to either. Little Max darted out of the bushes with his arms outstretched, making a zooming sound as if he were an aeroplane, and ran back to his family. When they went home from the park, Max was still holding onto his ball, trotting at Magnus's side as Magnus sang a soft Spanish lullaby, while the Shadow Hunter boys slept, drooling on Alec's shoulder. Janus did not follow them out of the park. He stayed by the gates and watched them go. The words of Janus's parapetai oath echoed in his head, worse than a death sentence. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. He had not kept his oath, but he'd wanted to. Death would have been welcome. Death would have meant being with Clary. Long ago in the other world, when Sebastian was sleeping, Janus had gone back for Alec, but the bodies had vanished. Janus hoped now that they had not been eaten by the roving, starving demons. He hoped Maris had burned Alec and Magnus both. He wished that a kind wind had carried their ashes away and let them stay together. When they first moved into Sirenworth Hall, the house in England that they intended to be their family's home, Jem and Tessa had noticed how often Kit's eyes fell on the valuables they had decorated the house with. One evening, they collected up everything they could think of and placed all their most prized possessions in Kit's room, lining them up on tables and windowsills. When Kit went into his room next, he stayed in there for some time and went absolutely quiet. Eventually, Jem and Tessa tapped on his door. At his assenting mumble, they pushed open the door and looked inside. They found Kit standing in the middle of the room. He hadn't touched anything.
"What does all this mean?" Kit asked. "Do you think I'd take them, and do you want me to?"
He sounded lost. His blue eyes fell on Tessa's first editions, on Jem's Stradivarius violin, as though they were signposts, and he was trying to find his way in a terribly strange land. Jem said, "We want you to stay, and to know that the choice is entirely yours, and we wanted to show you something. We want you to know that there is nothing in this house more precious to us than you." Kit had stayed. The home the Seelie Queen had given them stood on a hollow hill near bone-white sea cliffs, 100 leagues from either Seelie or Unseelie Court, and far from any prying eye that might spy the Queen's long-lost and long-sought-for son. Within the house, the walls flickered with shadows. As Janus came through the doorway into the dark, the shadows trembled in the wind that crept in with them. Ash was draped over a sofa, long legs stretched out, dressed in the fairy clothes the Queen had provided. Black silk, green velvet. Nothing but the finest for her boy. Ash hadn't aged much since they had come from Thule. He still looked 16, which was the age Janus believed him to be. He was holding up a piece of paper to the light, studying it intently. When he heard the door close, Ash turned his head, the white gold gossamer fine hair he had inherited from his father falling around his curved fairy ears, and hastily tucked the bloodstained piece of paper away into his pocket. "What's that?" Janus asked.
"Nothing important,"
said Ash with a slow blink of his grass-green eyes.
"You're back."
"Do you think I would have had eyes that colour?" Sebastian had said once, late at night when he was in one of his most melancholy moods. "If our father had not done what he did and made me what I am." Janus had not been able to reply. He couldn't imagine Sebastian or his flat shark's eyes, dead as the sun and black as the eternal night in their world, as anything other than they were. When he looked in Ash's eyes, green as springtime, green as new beginning, he thought of someone else entirely. It was hard to keep secrets from Sebastian. He always took them away, but Janus had kept that one. "It's good to be back," Janus told Ash slowly. He didn't like it much in Faerie, but Ash was here. He'd needed a secure place for Ash. Ash was going to change everything. Ash was the key. Nothing bad could happen to him. Janus knew Ash wanted him to like it here more than he did. When they came here, Ash had asked the Queen, his mother, for a piano. Now the piano stood near the doors, sleek and shining darkly, reflected by all the mirrors. Janus tried not to look at it.
You said you used to play once, Ash offered when the piano came.
Ash seemed disappointed when Janice said he no longer remembered how. Janice had imagined Ash would be happy and safe back with his mother, but the Queen said Ash couldn't stay at court.
I lost a daughter who will never return, she told them, thorns in her voice. I lost a son who returned past hope. I will never risk him again. He must be kept secret and secure.
So Ash lived in this isolated house, this cliff-top palace, and Janice lived here with him, for now. Janice didn't like the idea of abandoning Ash to live in the New York Institute, but that was where Clary was.
Wherever you are is where I want to be.
Janice needed water to wash away the bitter taste in his mouth. He went to get it and Ash followed him. Ash's step was very soft and Shadowhunter trained, entirely noiseless, like having a pale shadow. When Ash first came to Thule, Sebastian had been pleased. Sebastian had always liked the idea of blood binding someone to him. He'd seen it as a sign that he was doing everything right, that another world had delivered an heir to him, since in Thule, the Sealy Queen had died before she'd ever given birth. It pleased Sebastian's vanity that Ash resembled him. Sebastian had thought that finally here was what he had always wanted, someone like him. Sebastian embraced Ash and allowed Janice to do the same. For a while, Sebastian played with Ash, tried to teach him. But Sebastian grew tired of his toys quickly and broke them. Sebastian had not been patient with Ash for some time before the end. Once Sebastian had been training Ash, and Ash made a mistake. Sebastian had gone for Ash with a whip. Sebastian's face was startled and offended when Janice moved between them and caught the lash between his hands. The whip split Janice's palms open and blood dappled the ground.
Why not whip him? Father did it to me. Sebastian's voice was the whip now. And I'm strong. He didn't do it to you, and you were weak until I got my hands on you. I should do the best thing for my boy, shouldn't I?
Janice was already convinced. He should drop the whip and let Sebastian hurt Ash. But his words were racing ahead of his thoughts, as if he couldn't control them.
Of course. It's just that there are so many things for you to do. Training a boy should be the general's work, not the ruler's. You are higher than this. You know I want only to serve you and never to fail you. Let me train him. And if he isn't satisfactory, then the lash can be his guide.
He could feel Sebastian was bored with training anyway. After a moment, Sebastian cast whip and boy aside and strode off. Ash watched Sebastian walk away.
Hell of a father, Ash murmured.
Don't talk like that, Janice ordered.
Ash's face changed when he transferred his gaze from Sebastian to Janice, lingering on Janice's bloody hands. When Ash's eyes were not so hard and guarded, he reminded Janice of Clary. It made him think of how Clary had once looked at Simon or at Luke, before Clary and Luke died and Simon disappeared. When Sebastian came for Clary's mother, Luke had tried to stand in Sebastian's way.
I will do as you tell me, Ash offered suddenly. Since you are going to be my teacher, you'll see. I'll make you proud.
After that, Janice trained Ash, but Janice should never have stepped in. Sebastian noted how many hours Janice spent with Ash and decided he wanted to see results for all this training. Sebastian kept a pit of demons under the floor of Psycho Pomp, his favorite nightclub. It made for a nice showpiece and a convenient method of disposing of those disloyal to the star. Sebastian ordered that Ash be given a sword and dropped into it. Ash did not protest or struggle. He let Janice lead him forward to the very edge of the pit. Then he stepped out into the empty air and fell. A dark wave of demons closed over him. Sebastian and Janice both leaned forward, Janice sick with a pain he did not understand, and Sebastian smiling like a guardian angel. They watched as Ash's head broke through the wave of demons, a swimmer fighting his way to the surface in a dark sea. He rose, and rose again. He soared into the air, black wings spreading from his back.
Ah, Sebastian sounded delighted. So it has come to pass.
What is it? Janus had demanded. What's happening to him?
He is becoming more, said Sebastian. The Unseelie King worked magic upon him, and he has the blood of Lilith in him. Those are the wings of an angel, one of the fallen sort. They were always in his blood, but Thule has drawn them out of him.
Sebastian was applauding, laughing as Ash spun and flew low, slashing with his silver sword, slicing through the necks of a dozen demons at once. Ichor splashed the walls of the pit. Janus's hands itched. He had beaten Sebastian once, long ago, when he was someone else. We were both trained by Valentine, but I tried harder, because I loved my father and I wanted to please him so badly. Then there was Robert, and Maris, and Isabel, and Alec, always Alec. Every one of them teaching me whatever they knew, so I could protect myself, because they loved me. I was better than Sebastian. I was better. He'd trained with Clary, too, a few times. He meant to teach her everything he knew, so she could always protect herself, so they could fight together. Ash was as fearless and determined as she was. Janus could teach him everything, so Ash would always be safe. He did not know why, but it was important that Ash always be safe. When Janus watched Ash fight, he thought that when Ash was grown, he might beat Sebastian too. He crushed the treacherous idea down, but he couldn't help smiling a small smile down at Ash. Ash's lip curled back from his teeth. It was his father's sneer, his father's scorn, aimed at Sebastian himself. Then his green eyes passed with total withering indifference over Sebastian and caught on Janus. Ash smiled up at him. Janus went cold. So did Sebastian's voice.
My father, he mused. My sister.
Please, Janus begged. He couldn't talk about Clary. No, please. Sebastian never did have any mercy.
My father, my sister, my son. They were all mine, and yet they all wanted you more. Valentine's sweet boy. Clary's golden prince, Ash's guardian angel.
Nobody else ever dared speak Clary's name aloud.
You might as well know, Sebastian said. Nothing you feel for Ash is real. The Unseelie King gifted him with many gifts. The wings are but an outward expression of that. He also has the power to command perfect love and perfect loyalty. You have no choice but to want to protect him.
Janus froze. His heart beat slowly, thickly in his chest. It never occurred to him to doubt Sebastian. He had seen the way Annabelle was with Ash, how she would have laid down on broken glass so he could walk on her. This was why. This was why. Nothing Janus felt for Ash was real. Sebastian ordered that the pit be closed. Ash flew up, straight and dark as an arrow, and knelt at the pit's edge, his sword gleaming. His wings beat softly in the still air of Thule.
Are you angry, Jace? Sebastian said. That I told you the truth?
Janus had shaken his head. No. I exist to serve you. It was true. Sebastian was stronger. Whatever Janus had done once, Sebastian had beaten them in the end.
Yes, Sebastian sounded thoughtful. You're mine, and so is the world. But the world's hollow these days, isn't it?
The world had been hollow since Clary died. Janus had never expected to find meaning again. He thought of that later, when he bound Ash's wounds, and when they trained. If Ash had power over him, Janus thought, he didn't use it. He never ordered Janus to do anything he didn't want to do. Ash listened to him. He was careful. He didn't defy Sebastian. He kept training. Ash was very good, but it didn't please Sebastian any longer. Sometimes Janus caught Sebastian looking at Ash in a way Janus recognized. There was an edge and steel to that look, as if it were a dissecting knife. One day, when Sebastian was sleeping, it was a little easier to do certain things when Sebastian was sleeping. Janus took Ash outside and talked about traveling, about going somewhere, but not upsetting his father. Janus tried to explain, tried to work out how he could possibly explain. He couldn't say, "He wants to hurt you, and I don't." That would be impossible. Janus and Sebastian only wanted the same things. Janus ended up on his knees in the ashes, trying to choke out the words. Ash did what his father had never done, and went on his knees too. He put his arms around Janus.
"Come with me," he said.
"I can't," Janus gasped through waves of agony. "You know I can't." He screamed then. It felt right doing what Sebastian wanted. It was right. He didn't know how to do anything else, and when he tried, it went wrong. It hurt too much. He kept screaming.
"Don't," Ash said. "Don't." "Do you understand what I'm trying to tell you?"
Janus asked, his voice blurred. His head rang with pain and his mouth was full of blood from biting his tongue. But he was used to blood.
"Yes," Ash whispered. "I understand. You can stop."
The next time Ash and Sebastian were together, Ash pretended indifference as usual. But Janus caught a covert look in those green eyes as cold as any in Sebastian's. Ash hates Sebastian now, Janus realized. And he knew that he made everything worse. He'd known Ash was doomed. But Sebastian had died instead, and now Janus and Ash were in another world. It had not been easy to get here, but it was worth it. Everything could be different here. Janus finished his glass of water and tried to breathe, and glanced over to where Ash stood. Ash was watching him, and Janus swept the pale hair off Ash's brow. He tried to be gentle. It always made him feel steadier in this world and the other to look at Ash, Sebastian's son, with Clary's green eyes. The only thing besides Sebastian Janus was allowed to love. Ash, who was beloved and still not safe. Ash, who was all Janus had. For now. "There's blood in your hands," Ash murmured. Janus shrugged. "That's nothing new." He sat at the carven oak table where the last acorn that had ever fallen from the dead tree was set in the table's center. He laid his weary head in his arms. Once, Sebastian had told Janus that Sebastian was always burning, but it was better when he had Janus, when they were burning together. Now, Sebastian was dead, and Janus was still burning. Ash laid a cool hand on Janus's shoulder.
"I thought you would get better here," Ash said, his voice low. "But you're not, are you?"
Janus lifted his head for Ash's sake. "I will be," he promised. "Soon."
"Oh yes, I'd almost forgotten," Ash remarked, withdrawing. "When you go away and leave me."
Janus looked at him in surprise. "Why would I leave you?"
"Because you only love me because you have to," said Ash. "It's the spell, perfect loyalty. Did you think I didn't know?"
Ash's eyes were green ice. They didn't look anything like Clary's then. Janus went back to Magnus's, hardly knowing why he did so. He was aware it would be madness to go near the Institute, but surely this was safe. He wore all black like the Shadow Hunter he used to be. He stood, concealed by the shadow of a wall near Magnus's loft, waiting for someone he knew to come out. But instead he saw light and movement behind the windows. Perhaps they were staying in this evening. It was a foggy, misty night after all. Then a voice coming from the other direction said,
"I'll kill you, Jace Herondale."
The last time Janus had seen Simon in this world, Simon had said something similar. Simon's face had been moon pale and 16 years old, always 16 years old. He'd looked like a lost child, but in that world so many were lost children. Now Simon was walking down a street in New York. He was taller and older, his skin tan and ruined, and he was carrying groceries. Simon wasn't a vampire, Janice realized. He was a shadow hunter. What had happened in this world?
Yeah, Simon said, his voice amused. Yeah. Keep bragging. It's what you're best at. Prepare to be decimated. You're not as good at video games as you think.
He shifted his brown paper shopping bag to the crook of his elbow, his phone pressed between shoulder and ear.
Yes, I got the cupcakes, he added. And you're doing your job, right? Keep all the Lightwoods out of the kitchen. You can't let them touch anything.
There was a pause.
Isabel is the love of my life, but her seven-layer dip is like the nine circles of hell, said Simon. Don't tell her I said that.
Are you telling her I said that literally while you're on the phone with me?
You are so dead.
Simon hung up and dropped his phone in the pocket of his jeans, shaking his head. Then he let himself through the door. He seemed to have a key. Janice sidled around to the fire escape and clambered up to the second floor. Kneeling, he peered in through the window. Through the rain-wet glass, he saw someone dancing, laughing, long black hair swirling around her shoulders. After a dazed moment, Janice realized who it was. Isabel. Alive. Isabel, striking poses and laughing. Alec went to the window and gave her a hug, one-armed, as she showered the squirming child tucked under Alec's other arm with kisses. Janice had been with Valentine, and then with Sebastian, longer than he had been with these, his family. Sometimes it had seemed like a sentimental dream. More of your weakness, Jace. That he'd ever had the Lightwoods at all. Alec, Isabel, Max, Maris, Robert, his family. What had he done to Maris? What he'd had to do, Janice reminded himself, clenching his hand around his sword hilt. The best thing. The right thing. He couldn't be weak. There was a brightness at the edge of Janice's vision, as there often was, taunting and tormenting, never coalescing into anything real, except this time it did. So many times since Clary died, Janice had swung around thinking he would see her, hoping desperately for a ghost, for a whisper, for anything but this endless darkness without her. He had to stop wishing for her, stop hoping for her, stop searching for her. He had to burn his heart out until there was nothing left but ash. No matter where he looked, she was never there. Until now. Now he understood why Isabel had been striking poses. Clary was drawing her. She had wedged herself into a window seat opposite Isabel, her sketchbook balanced between them, her profile outlined against the glass. This time, she did not fade away or go wrong. This time, she was real. She'd died in his world when she was a girl, but here she was a woman. She had scars from runes on her arms. Her skin was a little darker and her freckles a little lighter, and her eyes were the color of the grass that no longer grew in Thule. Her hair was twisted up into a bun at the back of her head, a few fiery tendrils escaping. She glowed like a light. She was everything. Wherever you are is where I want to be. He was dizzy with the yearning to hold her, overwhelmed by the urge. Why not? He thought for a reckless moment, though he knew he was not allowed to be reckless. He had been once. He could see himself doing it. Going to her, going to them. Telling Clary everything and resting at last with his head on her knee. Then he came into the room. And the world went black and red with furious despair. He was all in black, as Janice was, but he was smiling, looking around easily, casually, with an absolute air of belonging. Alec smiled at him,
Isabel leaned over and poked him in the side with a painted fingernail.
And Clary, Clary, his Clary. She lifted her beautiful face up to his and gave him a kiss. He was there. The Jace from this world. And Janice hated him. Janice wanted to kill him, and he could do it. Why should he have everything when Janice had nothing? He should have been the one to remain in this dimension, not Jace. The rain hit the windows and blurred those within from his sight. He strained to see a glimpse of Clary's bright hair and could not. She was lost to him again. He was bitterly tired of her being lost. He couldn't breathe with the pain of it. He clambered down the fire escape and stumbled to the nearest alley where it was dark, where he would be hidden, where he could scream out all the agony in his soul. He tried, but as in a nightmare, no sound came out. Janice wanted to remember Clary's face at the window, but he could not see hers without seeing Jace's. That smooth young face, the bright head held arrogantly high, the clear golden eyes that had never seen his parapetite dead, the hands that had never killed Maris and countless others. That face had never known a world blackened and ruined after the loss of Clary. That was a boy who fought on the side of the angels all grown up. Valentine's sweet boy. Clary's golden prince. Janice understood the wretched, murderous jealousy in Sebastian's voice now. The jealousy of all you could never be. Janice could never be that boy again, or the man he had become. His shuddering breath sounded almost like sobs, but he stopped breathing when he heard her voice. Clary's, as if she was standing only a few feet away.
"How can all the vampires be drunk?" said Clary. "No, I mean, I understand how, Maya. I just don't know why anybody thought that would be a good idea."
There was a pause. Janice crept to the mouth of the alleyway. It still seemed impossible to believe, but she was there. Clary was standing outside, a foam pressed between her shoulder and her ear as she paced back and forth, a slim, vivid shape against the darkness. She was fighting her way into a coat and trying to keep hold of an umbrella. In doing so, her steely fell to the sidewalk, unnoticed, rolling until it came to a stop against a trash can.
"Well, I assumed we both blamed Elliot," Clary said. "Say no more. Simon, the former Downworlder, and his trusty Parapetai are on their way to keep the peace."
Clary half turned toward him. Streetlights made the raindrops caught in her hair glimmer like a radiant veil. This was another world. There were still angels here. Janice crept from the alleyway, picking up her steely.
"Who invited a stripper called Fairy Buns?" Clary demanded into the phone.
She stepped closer to him. His hand tightened on the steely. He knew that to approach her in his current state was madness, but she was so close.
"I don't even know what to say about the stripper." "Bye, Maya," said Clary, shaking her head as she ended the call.
Janice took a few steps and was beside her, just outside the pool of the streetlights.
"Hey,"
Clary said, still distracted by her phone.
"I thought you were staying behind."
She wasn't looking up at him. He swallowed and held out the steely. "I chased after you," he said, his voice sounding strange to his own ears. "You left this inside. You should have it with you."
"Oh,"
Clary said, taking it from him and slipping it into her coat.
"Thanks, I thought it was in my pocket."
She lifted the umbrella so it sheltered him, too, and leaned slightly against him. No more fantasies, no more dreams. He knew then that none of the illusions he'd tried to fool himself with had ever even come close. Every detail had been wrong, everything in the world had been wrong, and everything about himself. He'd been crawling across the scorching sand of the desert where her dead body lay for years, but now there was a shimmering oasis before him. She was here,
She was alive again. She was with him. And he would have suffered through every long day of every hopeless year again to touch her for a moment more. Clary was warm and breathing. She was staying that way no matter what he had to do or who he had to kill to keep her safe, to keep her with him. She leaned against him with perfect trust. A rain-bright curl brushed against Janice's shoulder, and he felt blessed, saved, though he'd failed to save her. It could all be different here. The vampire and werewolf meet and greet as descended into total chaos, Clary reported, her voice indescribably sweet in his ears. But Simon and I will get things under control. You go have a good time. He wanted her to go on talking, to let him hold her and drink up every word, but she was waiting for him to say something. He had to say something. He knew he was being stiff and strange, and he knew from the tension in her body that she could tell something was not right, but he had no idea how to fix it, how to relax, how to be the person he once was. His voice cracked. I missed you. She had to believe him. He had never meant any words so much.
Ah,
said Clary, her cheek against his shoulder. Nobody but me would ever believe you're as sweet as you are. His whisper was hoarse. Nobody but you would ever believe I'm sweet at all. She laughed. He'd made her laugh. It had been so many silent years since he last heard that sound.
This shouldn't take long. I told Maya that Simon and I would drop in and maybe escort a couple of the worst offenders back to the Hotel de Mort. Normally Lily would keep a handle on things, but Maya says Lily's really drunk too.
I'll come with you. Janice breathed in a scent of her hair. I'll keep you safe.
No need, Clary told him.
She began to draw away. Janice held on, crushing her against him. He would not let her leave him, not again. She lifted her head. He glimpsed her beautiful face in a flash of moonlight followed by shadow, saw her eyes narrow.
What's wrong with you, Jace? You're acting really weird.
No, no. You believe it's me. You know it's me. You know I'm the one who really belongs with you. The words stuttered through Janice's mind. He wanted to quiet the unease in her voice. He wanted her to lean against him again. Her touch made the world right. There was the sound of a van's wheels squealing to a stop on the street outside.
That's Simon, Clary said. Don't worry, I'll come back soon.
You will come back, but not to me. He let her go. It took all his strength. She smiled when he did, clearly puzzled by the way he was acting. She knows, he thought in terror. But then he had his reward. She stood on tiptoe and kissed him on his starving mouth. The memory of 1,000 years ago came to him. Kissing Clary in an alley full of rain, the feel of her wet skin, the scent of her sweat and perfume and the taste of her mouth. Her arms were around him. Her body was curvier now, fuller, and the roundness of her hips under his hands and the feel of her breast through her jacket overwhelmed his reeling senses, making him dizzy. He could scarcely breathe, but he would rather have her than air. The kiss painted every shadow gold. She drew away, and now the expression on her face was more confused than ever. She pressed her fingers to her lips. Her eyes searched his face even as his heart beat unevenly in his chest. He stepped back into the deeper shadows. She was starting to guess, he thought. I love you, he told her. So much. Someday you'll know how much.
Jace, she said.
And then Simon honked the horn of the van. Clary exhaled, her breath condensing to mist.
Go have fun. You've been working too hard, she said,
smiled a swift, uncertain smile, and dashed away to Simon's van. Janice crumpled as the van peeled away, falling to his knees on the drenched and dirty cement.
he kissed the ground where Clary had stood. He huddled there, face pressed against the stone, shuddering on his knees. He wouldn't be able to kill Jace easily and take his place by Clary's side. They would all know. He knew none of their jokes, the way they interacted. He had barely been able to fool Clary for a few stolen moments in the dark. Even now she suspected him, and later on she might ask Jace why he'd been acting so strange. Janice couldn't bear to think of it. He could never fool them all in the light, not yet. He did not realize for some time that he was soaked to the skin, shaking with cold and rage. He hated them all. He hated Alec and Isabel and Magnus and Simon. He hated and loved Clary in equal measure, and it was like poison in his throat. For all these years, he had been tortured and they had not noticed or cared or missed him. He would show them what the darkness could be like one day. The woods and the gardens were full of memories, but so was their home. Jem and Tessa had put up pictures on the stone walls, black and white photographs carefully preserved, of Will, of James and Lucy, who were Mina's half-brother and half-sister, separated by more than a century. Someday they could point out each face to Mina and tell her their names, and that they would have loved her. Memories were like love, wound and cure both at once. That night, they were all together in the nursery reading Mina her bedtime story. Mina was in Tessa's lap, gumming avidly at the edge of a rubber book. Tessa finished the story and looked down at Kit, who was lying on the carpet, propped up on his elbows. "I transformed into your mother once," Tessa told him in a low voice. "I know you never knew her." Kit stiffened but tried to pass it off casually, as he did most things.
"Yeah, I'm still absorbing the fact that I'm literally Rosemary's baby," he remarked.
"Read that book," Tessa said with a faint smile.
"Saw that movie," returned Kit.
"I have no idea what you two are talking about," said Jem, as he usually did when they played Read That Book, Saw That Movie. Later, Tessa would give him the book, or Kit would queue up the movie on his laptop.
"I don't want to hurt you," Tessa said. "I know I can't replace her or make up for the loss of her, but I wanted to tell you that your mother, the lost Herondale, the descendant of the first heir, she loved you. She never wanted to leave you. She spent her life running because she thought that was the best way to protect you. She'd always been running. It was the only way she knew. But the happiest time for her was the time when she returned to your father and they lived together in hiding for a few years and she had you. I don't get memories as clearly as I once did, but I can remember being her. Remember holding you when you were as small as my Mina is now. I know the song she used to sing to you."
Kit scrambled up now. He sat at Tessa's feet with his head bowed as she began to sing. Jem reached for his violin. He played a tune of love and loss, of searching and finding, a melody that ran like a river beneath the bridge of his wife's voice, the melody he loved best in all the world.
"I gave my love a story that had no end. I gave my love a baby with no crying."
She sang the song of Rosemary Herondale, and Jem thought of how impossibly lucky he had been. It could all have been darkness for him, and silence, forever, until he lost hope even for what came after death. If there had been no Tessa, if he had lost her too, if she had not been immortal. But then she would not have been who she was. That might have been a part of what drew him to her first, when he was a dying boy a century and more ago, and she was the loveliest girl he'd ever seen, a girl who had travelled to him across the sea, impossible and magical and beautiful beyond stories or music, a girl who would live forever. At last he was no longer doomed, and she was still so lovely. Jem played a song for Will, for all those he loved on the farthest shore,
and for his wife and his baby and the boy who was safe in his keeping, here together in this warm, small room at home. One day they might be parted, but they could remember this moment and this melody.
The story that I love you,
Tessa sang.
It has no end.
Jem believed her. Janus visited the Silly Queen before he went back to Ash. You knew my plans had no chance of succeeding, he said to her, his voice flat. You knew I could not pretend to be that arrogant fool.
He has the arrogance of luck and being loved, said the Queen. But would you really want all of them to love you and believe you were him? Or would you rather be loved as your own self?
You know what I want, he said. Her smile was the curve of a cat's tail.
And you can have it. Let us make new plans.
The Queen had always wanted him to stay in the House of Mirrors by the sea. He realized that now. She wanted him to be Ash's guardian, Ash's guard who nobody could pass. Janus could do that. He wanted to do that. He would help her to her heart's desire if she would give him his. They talked for a long time. The Queen seemed pleased by the idea that they had someone in New York who would do Janus a favor. She said she could slip Lily a forgetting potion until the time came for Janus to collect his favor. The Queen suggested several more ideas and then said that Ash was waiting. The Queen was right. This time, Janus did not catch Ash by surprise. Ash met him as Janus made his way up the winding road to home. Ash had been out flying. Janus watched as Ash landed, alighting in the long grass of the cliff by the sea, his black wings folded down against his narrow back and his broadening shoulders, and there was a bright expectancy on Ash's face that was almost like hope. Ash had looked at his father, Sebastian, that way long ago, but it hadn't lasted. He looked at his mother, the Queen, that way, but the brightness was beginning to fade now, as Ash learned how different his mother was from his childish memories and yearnings. Ash only had Janus, but Janus would not fail him as his parents had.
You're back.
I was watching out for you, said Ash. How did you know I was coming? Janus asked.
I didn't. I just sometimes look out to see if you might come, that's all.
Ash shrugged, but Janus didn't think his shrug was as indifferent as Ash made it seem. I saw Clary, Janus said quietly. She'll be with us one day.
I thought... Ash looked puzzled. I thought you were going to live with her in the New York Institute.
Plans change, said Janus.
What's the new plan? Ash said. Will you stay?
My last hope, Janus wanted to say. I will always love you and never leave you. I knew this world must be better than ours because you come from this one. What if I did? Janus asked Ash. What would you say if I said I would stay with you and train you?
Ash kicked at a pebble. I would say that I didn't understand why, he said. I know you don't have real feelings for me. You want to stay and protect me because the dark artificers make it so. You have to love me and be loyal to me. But distance makes that feeling fade. I know my mother actually loves me in her way because she still missed me when I was gone. But I thought that you, once you started traveling to the human world so often.
I didn't know that, said Janus, thinking back to Sebastian's long-ago words about Ash's power to inspire love. That distance makes it fade.
It does, Ash said. So if you want to go now.
I don't, said Janus, a swell of warmth, like a small tide lifting his heart. I never felt any differently about you in the mundane world than I do when you're right next to me. You're mine. Ash smiled.
Who else's?
The Queen's son and Sebastian's. Lilith's blood and Valentine's and Clary's.
He was well named, Sebastian had said once. He was born to rule over a land turned to ash.
Janice had seen what Sebastian had done to her world. Time to see what Ash did to this one. When Janice's plans were complete, when the world became chaos and death, Janice and Ash could both belong. This was a second chance. When the darkness came, Janice could protect Clary. He could keep his family safe. Everybody he loved, starting with Ash. If I teach you to be a shadow hunter, if I teach you to bear runes, it will hurt. That's okay, Ash replied. The old Anseelie King hurt me. My father hurt me. I'm used to it. I don't want to hurt you, murmured Janice.
I know, said Ash. That's why it's okay.
Valentine had taught Janice through discipline that sometimes seemed harsh, and it had been right to teach Janice that way. But Ash was different. He was strong and smart and quick, and he would learn fast. Janice would never have to kill Ash or stand by and watch him be killed. Sebastian was dead, and Janice still breathed. Sebastian was dead, and Janice and Ash were free. Ash hesitated.
What did you see out there?
In the mundane world. His voice was fascinated and almost yearning. Ash had been a captive most of his life, a winged thing in a golden cage. Even now he could not go far from their home. There were too many dangers for the son of the queen, and Ash had such a bright future ahead of him, so bright it was like the sun, impossible to contemplate. Janice shouldn't have left Ash alone, but he'd make it up to him. Janice would do better than tell Ash hollow words. Ash must be defended. If he had to, Janice would deal with anyone who posed a threat to Ash or his plans for Ash. This new Anseelie King might be a problem. Far worse, there were rumors about a danger the Queen would not speak of, but that Janice had heard about nonetheless. The descendant of someone called the First Heir. Whoever it was, if they dared threaten Ash, if anyone ever dared threaten Ash again, Janice would hunt them down and present Ash with their heads. The blue waves crashed against the stones miles down from the cliff at their feet. It made Janice recall a poem about the ocean and fairyland. For whatsoever from one place doth fall, is with the tide unto another brought. For there is nothing lost that may be found if sought. It's a beautiful world out there, Janice answered. I was thinking I'd wrap a bow around it and give it to you. Soon Janice would have Clary, and Ash would have the world. They only had to wait. Ash smiled. Behind his green eyes a predator lurked, like a tiger half obscured by leaves. I'd like that, he said. Tessa was putting Mina down for her nap. Jem lay in the long grass beneath the oak tree, with his cat curled against his chest, almost napping himself. Church pressed his flat, fuzzy face on the place where he could feel Jem's heartbeat. Jem could feel the cat's purr reverberating through his chest, as if his heart and the cat's contentment were combining to form the same song.
It took us a long, long time to be happy, said Jem. But here we are. I think it was worth it, don't you?
Church purred agreement. They were waiting, as the sun dipped lower in the sky, for Kit to stop fainting and parrying, fighting intently with nothing but air, and notice they were there.
Oh, hey, Jem,
said Kit at last, lowering his broadsword and wiping the sweat from his brow with one suntanned forearm. Hey, bad cat.
He's a sweet cat, really, said Jem. You have to learn how he likes to be petted.
I know how he likes to be petted, said Kit. By you and no one else. That cat is waiting for the chance to literally pee on my Cheerios.
He pointed the sword accusingly at Church.
I'm watching you.
Church seemed unimpressed. They'd cleared a training ground for Kit at the bottom of the garden. It had been the first request he made, hesitantly and with many assurances that it was fine if it wasn't convenient. And Tessa had used magic, and Jem a scythe, to clear a space at once. Kit trained there every day.
I saw you running laps at dawn,
Jem observed.
Wow, that's a horrible thing to say about anybody.
Kit shrugged uncomfortably, as if trying to shift the weight of a burden.
I'm not very naturally gifted at this Shadowhunter thing. The Blackthorn... Other people, they were born in institutes, raised to it, but mostly my dad taught me card tricks. I don't think demons will be impressed by my card tricks, though they are pretty excellent.
You don't have to be a Shadowhunter, said Jem. I'm not one, but I was. It was what I wanted once. I know what it looks like when you want something so much it almost breaks you. To fight. To be Parapatai with will. To kill demons and protect the innocent. To live the kind of life his parents would be proud of when he saw them again. And the thought that carried Jem through the worst nights as he grew to manhood. To find love, like his parents' love. Transforming and sanctifying. He had to last until love came. Love had been worth the wait.
If you're asking whether I'm working out my emotional pain through a punishing physical regimen, said Kit, my answer is obviously a manly yes. But I was hoping time would speed up when I did, and a rock soundtrack would start up and I would get buff via montage like in the movies. All the superhero movies and that one boxing movie have lied to me.
You're getting better, said Jem.
Kit grimaced.
I still get winded easily.
When I learned to fight, I was dying from slow poison, said Jem. And I was, yes, still faster than you.
Kit laughed. His eyes were Herondale eyes, but his laugh was all his own, mischievous and cynical and a little innocent despite that.
Train with me, said Kit.
Jem smiled.
What?
Kit asked anxiously.
Do you not want to?
I said that to somebody once, said Jem. A long time ago. He did train with me. And now I'll train you.
Kit hesitated, then said,
Will?
And Jem nodded.
Do you...
Kit bit his lip.
Do you still think about him a lot?
I loved him better than I love myself, said Jem. I still do. I think about him every day. Kit blinked quickly. There was a pain behind his eyes. The hidden kind.
The sort Will had carried, along with his secrets for so many years. Jem did not know its exact meaning or shape, but he could guess.
Whoever you have loved, and however you love them, said Jem. Anyone you loved would be lucky.
Kit was staring at the ground again, at the dust of the training ground.
We are dust and shadows, Will used to say.
Yeah, well, that's a minority opinion, Kit mumbled.
Then he lifted his chin, blue eyes defiant, throwing a challenge at pain.
Tessa says my mom loved me, but I never knew her. She didn't know me. My dad knew me, and he didn't care. Don't say he did, I know he didn't. But he loved my mom, apparently, so it wasn't that he couldn't love anyone. It was that he couldn't love me.
And
nobody else has either. I wasn't enough to stop. I wasn't enough. I've never been enough. Not for anyone. And I'm trying. But I don't know if I ever will be.
Jem didn't know exactly what had happened at the Los Angeles Institute, where he and Tessa had left Kit believing he would be safe. It was clear Kit had been badly hurt, there with Emma and the Blackthorns. Jem believed the Blackthorns all had good and open hearts. But they had suffered great losses while Kit was with them, and sometimes when people were wounded they hurt others. They were all very young, and Kit had not been with them long. Jem did know enough to see Johnny Rook must have done something truly wrong, if he'd had all Kit's life to show him that he was loved and never convinced him.
I loved my parents, said Jem. And they loved me.
Kit blinked.
Good for you.
I had a happy childhood with them in Shanghai. The kind of childhood you should have had. The kind of childhood everyone should have. Then they were tortured and murdered in front of me. And I was tortured too. And the shadow hunters told me I would die. I knew I would die. I could feel the poison coursing in my veins. And I remember lying curled in a cabin at the bottom of a boat on my way to England, feeling utterly small, hollow, and hopeless, and miserable. I thought I might die that way, that I couldn't bear the torture of loving and losing someone, not ever again. But then, there was Will. And I loved him, and he loved me. If your father's heart was too little and wretched to love someone else after losing your mother, then I pity him. But I know it was his fault, none of yours.
The wind went sighing through the leaves, but it was only a soft sigh. Summer was coming, and winter would not be for a while yet. Kit laid his sword down and walked over to the tree where Jem was sitting. He came and sat in the grass in front of Jem, as he'd sat at Tessa's feet while she told him about his mother.
All this being the descendant of the first heir stuff, said Kit. I don't know what to do about it, but I know I have to be ready. I think about evil fairies and Herondales and my dad, and I don't know how to be anything but a big mess.
Jem did not know what would come either, but he was sure of one thing. Kit would not run when danger called. Kit would stand and fight. The search for the lost Herondale, Jem refusing the greater demon Belial's temptations, Jem being turned away and then called back by Rosemary Herondale, had all led to this. Rosemary's child was Jem's now. It was Jem's job to teach Kit how to fight as well as he could.
Think of the people you love, said Jem,
and Kit startled.
It doesn't matter if they didn't love you back, or if they did. You keep them here.
Jem reached out and laid his hand against Kit's chest, felt it beating too swiftly beneath his palm.
Do you want to keep them somewhere small and mean, with the walls closing in?
Kit shook his head silently, lips pressed tight together.
No,
Jem said softly.
You won't. You choose to be yourself, your best self. You can be descended from gods and monsters. You can take the light they left you and be a lamp shining out all their light made new. You can battle the darkness. You can choose always to fight and hope. That is what it means to have a great heart. Don't be afraid of being yourself.
But,
Kit fumbled for words,
I know that you and Tessa took me in because of Will, and I'm grateful. I can be like...
His shoulders shook and Jem reached out, putting his arms around Kit. He felt Kit's muscles lock, almost straining away. Then felt the moment when Kit chose to lean in and lay his head down on Jem's shoulder.
No, Jem told him fiercely. Don't be grateful.
Where there is love, Kit, he murmured into the wild gold of his hair, there is no need for gratitude. And I love you. Kit shook and nodded once.
Okay,
Kit whispered. Jem felt tears drop hot into the curve of his neck. He held Kit safe in his arms until his tears were dry and they could both pretend he had not wept. He held Kit until Church growled jealously and tried to squirm in between them.
Dumb cat, Kit muttered.
Church hissed and swiped at him. Jem gave Church a disappointed look, then stood and offered Kit a hand.
Come inside where it's warm,
Jim said. Tomorrow, we'll start you on weights so you can learn the right balance to strike with that sword. For now, I can hear Tessa and Mina. Let's go be with our family. The doors were already standing invitingly open. As they came closer, Jem could see Tessa, in a gown the same grey as her eyes, grey as the river under the bridge where she had met him year after year after year. She was laughing.
I couldn't get Mina to sleep, she called. She thinks she might go on an adventure without her.
Kit said,
not today.
He went in ahead of Jem, and Mina wriggled in her mother's arms, eagerly reaching out towards them. Jem smiled at the sight of his daughter and paused long enough to think.
Will. My Will. You would be so proud.
Jem went inside to his wife and his baby and his boy, to his long-awaited home. Above the low slate roof, sunset had dyed the clouds a color darker than gold. This evening, the whole sky was bronze, as though to summon wicked powers.
Ghosts of the Shadow Market was written by Cassandra Clare, Sarah Reese Brennan, Maureen Johnson, Kelly Link, and Robin Wasserman. Cast Long Shadows was written by Cassandra Clare and Sarah Reese Brennan and read by Jonathan Bailey. Every Exquisite Thing was written by Cassandra Clare and Maureen Johnson and read by Laura Pulver. Learn About Loss was written by Cassandra Clare and Kelly Link and read by Ross Butler. A Deeper Love was written by Cassandra Clare and Maureen Johnson and read by Kiersey Clemons. The Wicked Ones was written by Cassandra Clare and Robin Wasserman and read by Emily Bett Rickards. Son of the Dawn was written by Cassandra Clare and Sarah Reese Brennan and read by Riley Dolman. The Land I Lost was written by Cassandra Clare and Sarah Reese Brennan and read by Melissa Fumero. Through Blood, Through Fire was written by Cassandra Clare and Robin Wasserman and read by Candace King. The Lost World was written by Cassandra Clare and Kelly Link and read by Olivia Taylor Dudley. Forever Fallen was written by Cassandra Clare and Sarah Reese Brennan and read by Sean Delaney. Ghosts of the Shadow Market was recorded at Cosmic Sound, Warehouse Studios, The Sound Company Studios, John Marshall Media, The Invisible Studios, and Dave and Dave Recording Studios. Editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions, Stephen Strassman and Mike Ticino for Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. The mix engineer was Terry Hogan. The associate producers were Aaron Larson and Elliot Rombach. Ghosts of the Shadow Market was produced and directed by Christina Zarafanidis. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Ghosts of the Shadow Market is available in print from Margaret K. McElderry Books. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, Tales from the Shadow Hunter Academy by Cassandra Clare, Sarah Reese Brennan, Maureen Johnson, and Robin Wasserman. Read by Devin Bostick, Torrance Coombs, Brett Dalton, Jack Falahi, Sam Hewen, Kiahu Kahuanui, Ki Hong Lee, Nico Miralegro, Luke Pasqualino, and Chris Wood.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.